Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chelsea Echo. That's right. If you are watching us, hello. If you're listening to us still, hello. It's a new dawn. It's a new beginning. Yep. I've got a set. I thought it looked really good. Then Dan has to one-up me like he always does and put like really fancy balls in and make his look really sexy and really professional. And I feel really insecure about it. But it's fine. It's good. Dan, we're so here. I'm so excited.
It's been a long time. It's actually just CGI behind me. I paid a load of VFX artists to work overtime. So that's really what all this is behind me.
It is sick. I absolutely love it. Like this is not something where I'm looking at it and going. I was taking a piss. I think it's like I don't feel insecure. I just think yours is amazing. It is. I love. I think my favorite thing about it is the wall just sat with the ball. Sorry, sat on the wall. It's just so.
Yeah,
it's so old school. I love it. It's sexy. But I've got my I have that you don't have, right? Match worn Moderna shirt by Ghana captain John Mensah. That's right. You bet you know who that is, because I don't.
I don't think many people have that, to be honest.
He played for Sunderland for about. I think he made six appearances. Well, he made six appearances for Moderna, and I think he made about 25 for Sunderland. So it wasn't even that much of a, you know. A big player. Anyway, doesn't matter. We're not here to talk about John Mensah. We're here to talk about the Chelsea. And obviously Chelsea are taking on Arsenal this weekend and it's going to be a big game. So I've got my cup of tea. Dan's got his. We're going to have a little chat for about 45 minutes and you're going to join us. And it's going to be fantastic. So Dan, first things first, as much as we're looking all brand new and sexy and all that sort of stuff with our current backdrops, what we should talk about is the previous fixtures. So obviously Chelsea played Noah with a massive, amazing goal by the person who I will continue to push for propaganda-wise in Mykhailo Mudryk. And obviously we have the previous Premier League fixture from the weekend before against Manchester United. So where do we start, Daniel?
I think Noah, just simply because I think it's a bit like with these fixtures, it's a bit quicker to get through. I think there's probably more to say, I'd suspect, about Man United.
Yeah, go on then. Should we talk about Mykhailo Mudryk and how he should be starting at the weekend then? Or should we save that for the 11s thing?
I mean, I think we can save that for the 11. I mean, obviously, for him, it was a really good evening. I think for Chelsea, it was a really good evening. It kind of went the way I suspected. I think it was just that it was quite incredible to be sat there 45 minutes, 6-0 up. I thought that may have been the score over the course of 90 minutes, not 45 minutes. And, you know, obviously Chelsea were assisted, especially with the second goal. But I thought all round the ability of Chelsea to capitalise on that weakness and for those players who are kind of in a weird situation, because I think most people walk into that kind of game and, I know it sounds a bit of a cliche, Chelsea can't really win because they're expected to win comfortably. If they do win comfortably, everyone kind of shrugs their shoulders and goes, well, you were supposed to do that anyway. And it's kind of hard to look at what happened last night and take any serious things from it in relation to what's going to happen on Sunday. But given the minutes for João Félix, Nkunku, Mokgiu, Mudryk, great to see Tyrique George, I thought all round they did as much as they possibly could. I think it's just, as I said in my voice note review, how serious that then it feeds into Sunday's game, I think, is the broader question for those players.
No, I agree. And obviously there was no Jadon Sancho at all in the fixture against Noah. So the likelihood is we're probably going to be seeing him playing against Arsenal. And of course that is all going to come down to as well. Like I said, as much as Noah, it's the Conference League, he talks about how players want to step up, that's that sort of game where I do feel that those players really should perform. I was actually, and I know it might be because I'm slightly overcritical, I think João Félix could have done more in the fixture against Noah. I think that some of his decision making and, you know, trying to look sexy with, you know, little ball swerves and little, you know, dips of the shoulder and finding those spaces, but then trying to do too much with it rather than just keeping it simple to basically, let's be honest, look, we'll talk about it later in the 11, Cole Palmer is most likely unavailable for this game at the weekend because Lisandro Martinez doesn't know what a knee-high tackle is in comparison to most humans that are taller than him. So, you know, in that case, that was really an opportunity for Nkunku or João Félix put themselves in the window and be like, right, we're here, we're going to have that number 10 slot, this is ours. And out of the two, I mean, look, I thought both had fairly quiet nights, but Nkunku did the simple stuff better than João Félix. And this is the problem with João Félix, where I think everyone loves him where because of the sexy name and where he's been and what he's done. Mm. But deliverables that he's yet to make in a Chelsea shirt sometimes do make me worry. And look, I know it's a small fee. I know it's something which is basically, it's almost null and void, the fee. I mean, you and I spoke about this on several occasions. But I did think that he could have done more. And I was actually quite disappointed with his performance. People will say, well, you know, he scored two goals. He could have got a hat trick. So yeah, he could have done. But there's more to it than that. And I just think his overall game could have improved.
Mm. I slightly disagree, just in the context of the game, especially if you compare him to Mudryk and Nkunku. I actually think out of those three, I think Félix was the best. Félix could have scored more. I think he had a couple of chances. He had one first chance of the game. Brilliant ball in from Tyreek George. He has to be scoring that. Somehow contrives to miss it. And I thought, oh no, is this going to be another João Félix, you know, all show, no finish kind of performance? But I think he obviously got better, scored a couple of goals. My criticisms of João Félix, I think, I've spoken about them enough times on my podcast and on this podcast as well. They aren't going to change. And I don't think last night radically alters my perception, overall perception and kind of criticism of João Félix as a player, because I think his issue, especially in big games and games that matter, and we saw this showcased against Newcastle quite recently, that his finish lets him down, unfortunately. Like, that's the thing about him. I think the Nkunku conversation is broader, in terms of there's been reports of this week about, like, if it stays the way it is, where he remains kind of a B player for Maresca, is his future in doubt at Chelsea, and will he be looking to move on? Because I feel very differently about Nkunku generally at Chelsea. I think he's a brilliant player. I think he's a good goal scorer. It's just he can't really be a second choice player, because that's not really, I think, what his talent deserves. I don't think you can argue that he's failed to be a first choice player. I don't know about you. It's one of those things with Nkunku where I think we have to rectify it if we want to keep him, because I think he will look at it and go, I could be going somewhere else and being a first team a week in, week out, because the numbers showcase that Nkunku is a goal scorer, and I don't think he's failed at Chelsea. It's just Maresca's ability to get all his best attacking players, Palmer, Jackson, and Nkunku mainly. I think those three, it's trying to fit those three into one coherent team that's been the issue so far.
No, I agree. And I think, look, I think that's a big talking point for later on the show with the 11, because I think that's where we've got to see if there's a way that is even plausible to have that conversation, because, you know, it is tough. And I do feel sorry for Christopher Nkunku, because he's somebody who has definitely, as you say, done enough to deliver. But we'll touch on that a bit later in the show. Having said all of that, we should probably talk a little bit about Manchester United, the game, which, I mean, it was just massively underwhelming by the end of it. And I came out of that very frustrated, if anything. Granted, it's a point at Old Trafford. Chelsea haven't won there since 2013. But with that being said, I mean, how did you feel about Chelsea's performance, and in my opinion a lackluster one against Manchester United?
Yeah, I think the overall analysis is 2 points dropped, even though I didn't go into the game with any kind of like major confidence, because how can you, given that record at Old Trafford? But especially where the first half played out, I thought our ability to control the ball and get it into good areas was a lot better than what we did there last year. But I thought the execution was really lacking. I mean, whether that was through Cole Palmer or especially Malo Gusto, I know came in for a lot of criticism because he got into some really good areas. I thought Noni Madueke had a really wayward game. I think actually out of the attacking players, Neto looked the most promising. and looked the most like he was kind of at a similar level to what he had been in previous weeks. And then I think the frustration for me is that, listen, you can go to grounds like Old Trafford, no matter how bad they're playing, and it can still be quite a tight game. I think the thing that frustrates me is that it's the classic errors that we've seen from Chelsea and flaws of, you know, Robert Sanchez. Like, Robert Sanchez, it's my Substack piece this week, and we talked about it a lot during the summer. The more you persist with this guy, the more he's going to cost you. I think for me, the penalty is mainly on him. I know people were having a go at Fofana, but that doesn't instantly mean that Sanchez has to rush out and take him out. I think a better goalkeeper there is trying to jockey him into a more unfavourable angle. I think Højlund is not a confident striker at the moment. I think you could already see in that moment before he did decide to take him out that Højlund didn't quite know what to do, because he didn't hit it first time and he was sort of maybe doubting what he should do with that ball. But then the moment you jump in, it makes it a very simple decision for Rasmus Højlund, and you know, then you get a 1-0. I think it was good that Chelsea responded quickly, because I was fearful that they weren't, and it came for our best player on the day, who I think arguably, in terms of week in, week out, consistent high-level performances, I think Moises Caicedo has probably been Chelsea's best. Even though, of course, Cole Palmer has been sensational, I think Palmer's had one or two all right to kind of disappointing performances, whilst I think Caicedo's performances have really been quite high.
Do you know why Moises Caicedo has been so good, though? I feel like, you know, Moises Caicedo has been so good purely because you don't talk about him. I feel like it's that sort of position in the pitch and that defensive midfield role almost, especially, I think obviously we talk about him with the United game because, let's be honest, he caught that volley perfectly, and that was nothing short of Essien-esque, genuinely. And I don't use that term lightly at all. But the way that he caught that and the way that he's been playing is fantastic. But then you take away that goal, you just see the simple stuff being done really well. If you watch Moises Caicedo every week, you appreciate that. And I think that's why, when you don't hear people talking about him, that's a good thing. I've been saying this for about 18 months, you know, ever since we signed him. The reason that we were talking about him, one, was the massive fee, which I think even himself, he admitted that, you know, he did struggle with it at first, but he's grown into the role now. And he, like you said, he's been Chelsea's best week in, week out performer. Cole Palmer is in another echelon, and we're not going to sit here and say that he's not Chelsea's best player. But Moises Caicedo simply just... I love a player and I appreciate a player who just does the really simple, clean cut stuff so well. And I think that's what Chelsea have needed for such a long time. And with the long contract he's on, and hopefully a likelihood that he'll stay for a long time, it's one of the few cases that we've seen so far where Chelsea's methodology of paying high fees for young players and a player which they can amortise it for a longer period, we could see a return on. But obviously it's early doors. But I agree with you, mate. He's been Chelsea's strongest performer this season, I'd argue.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the way he's matured into a really dominant player, an assured player, someone who clearly feels more comfortable in that role. I think some credit has to go to maybe Pochettino at the end of last season, because this run of form from Caicedo is not just from like August this year. It, you know, we saw it at the end of last season, when him and Gallagher were forming quite a good relationship. I think in terms of his all-round game, you talk about like the simple stuff, but it's also, I consistently talk about this, his creative side as well, I think is maybe underrated. You know, the way he's able to thread passes through to the likes of Nicholas Jackson, or the way he's able to execute cross-field balls to get Chelsea further up the pitch. It's those things that, you know, we talk about the brilliant Chelsea defensive midfielders of the last decade, two decades. You know, you think about Claude Makélélé, you think about obviously N'Golo Kanté, even though I guess strictly speaking he wasn't exactly a holding midfielder, Michael Essien, you throw his name in there, John Obi Mikel, players who were just very effective and very dominant. And I think that that's what we hope him and Lavia can develop into, because it's not flawless. Like, I know there was some criticism, a guy I respect a lot, Joe Tweeds, was, you know, is not quite on the same level as me in terms of praising Caicedo. I just think that it's very hard to, for me, look at we talk about the deficiencies in his Chelsea team, and I think you can do both. I think you can look at the deficiencies within our defensive play or our goalkeeper and other things that could be worked upon and improved upon. But then also say that Caicedo, I think just objectively, I think it's very difficult to argue against him being one of our strongest players. I trust my eyes watching football, but the numbers also back up how effective he is. Like that, he's has like the most interceptions. He's tackling so well. He's one of the highest in the numbers and the stats that you'd want a player in his role to be at for Chelsea. So I just hope that continues. And I think the slight shame of it is that those games against the likes of Man United, against the likes of Liverpool, against the likes of Arsenal on Sunday, are so defining because people shape their narrative around players on that. I guess the good thing for Caicedo was because he scored and because Chelsea didn't lose, he was kind of deemed a winner from the game, which is good. But I really hope he puts in a level performance like that on Sunday and Chelsea can win, and then he's going to get extra plaudits.
Yeah, and I think that's hopefully what we're going to be seeing. But of course, we'll be talking again. We talk about these players. We're going to talk about them so much more in the 11. Obviously, Caicedo and Lavia. That's a big talking point I want to touch on later on in the show, because I don't know if you heard on Final Score, the score, there was a lot of people that were actually quite disappointed with that double pivot, and I can't fathom it and I can't understand it. So we're going to get Dan's thoughts on that later on in the show. But of course, we've touched on Manchester United away. We have touched on Chelsea's game against Noah with one of the largest victories in European history for Chelsea and the largest victory in the Conference League. But as much as we've spoken about that, we do need to move on. And it's time to move on. It's the only part of the show that has a jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Well, here we are. It's the big one. It's Arsenal. It's the one we've all been waiting for since last April, and we're ready to go. Before the game, of course, you need your stats ahead of such a big fixture, and we have got the stats. Don't you worry. The overall record doesn't read very well, if I'm honest, from a Chelsea perspective. There are 209 matches played, and quite similar to Manchester United. It is infavorably against Chelsea, this one. 66 wins, that's 32% for Chelsea, 59 draws and 84 losses against the Gunners. The recent record, it has been even worse than the overall record. It's been bleak, to be honest, of late for Chelsea against Arsenal, with the Gunners, they've risen to be genuine title contenders in the last two seasons, where, of course, Chelsea have fallen to new lows, certainly in the last 20 to 25 years, although that hopefully has come to an end, and so we will swiftly move past that. Although we do need to look back, sadly, at some of the recent results. Perhaps no fixture shows that change, I guess, in both teams' trajectory in the last 2 years than the 5-0 defeat last April. That's what I mentioned at the start of the pod. That's why we're hurting, and that's why this game means so much. It was quite literally men against boys that day, and I think that was probably when it all came to a grinding halt for Maurizio Pochettino. And, rumour has it that is when it all did come to a halt, literally with the board deciding after that game that it was all over. But anyway, in fact, Chelsea have actually only won one of their last 10 matches against Arsenal, which was a 2-0 win in August 2021. Remember that one when Lukaku and Reece James hit the back of the net at the start of what I would say is probably the biggest Chelsea false dawn of recent times. Thought Chelsea might be title contenders. No. Turned out they were just playing against Pablo Mari. Anyway, back to stats, because that's what I am here for. Arsenal have won 8 of those 10 clashes, including the 2020 FA Cup final, and have not lost at Stamford Bridge in any of their last 5, drawing 2 and losing 3. Last season, Chelsea found themselves 2-0 up at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League clash shortly after half-time, thanks to goals from Palmer and Mykhailo Mudryk, before Declan Rice and Yandro Trossard hit back with 2 goals in 7 minutes late in the second half to level the scores. Chelsea's last Premier League win over Arsenal came all the way back in August 2018 at Stamford Bridge, which was a 3-2 win under Maurizio Sarri. That is a long time ago. Manager record, it's pretty short for Enzo Maresca, as usually will be this season in this section. He's never managed against Arsenal, but he has got 2 wins from 2 over Arsenal 21s, winning 4-1 and 2-0. His counterpart, Mikel Arteta, well, he won three times in 11 appearances as a player against Chelsea. Perhaps doesn't have the best Stamford Bridge memories, having played a full 90 minutes in the 6-0 defeat in Arsene Wenger's 1,000th game. We'll ignore the fact that he did actually score in the 5-3 at Stamford Bridge as well, and just focus on the fact that he played in that 6-0. As a manager, though, Arteta has sadly got a very impressive record against Chelsea, winning 7 and drawing 2 of his 11 matches in charge, with his side scoring 23 goals and only conceding 13. It's time to buck that trend. It's back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Daniel, shagging, stats, thoughts.
Numbers said were.
Nice, fantastic. Let's move swiftly on then. Look, Arsenal, a side which maybe not in the best of form. And 9 times out of 10, I would be more confident and more comfortable 5 years ago. But Arsenal have come to Stamford Bridge on successive occasions now and beaten Chelsea, which is something which, for a long period, they couldn't say they'd done. So I'm not going to get too ahead of myself, but a pretty strong Arsenal side was fielded against Inter at the San Siro during midweek. They really didn't pose a threat at any point in the game. I'd argue, as much as I like to slate Italian football, I think Inter Milan are a side which maybe, compared to the rest of the league, fare better and seem much stronger against European counterparts in major leagues, especially in the Premier League. I mean, look, as much as City did the treble, it took a lot to break down Inter Milan in that final in Istanbul. How are you feeling about Arsenal? Do you think people should be more confident, or do you think it's very much a case of let's just take each minute as it comes in that game?
Yeah, of course, I think that Arsenal's recent form elevates your kind of confidence naturally. They haven't won a Premier League game since early October, and that was at home to Southampton. They've lost to Bournemouth, they drew with Liverpool, they've lost to Newcastle quite recently. And of course, I watched the full Inter game, and defensively, I think it was another showcase of a flaw and a frustration that I see a lot of people who, you know, Arsenal fans, people who watch Arsenal quite consistently, have been saying recently about the team, is that they're really struggling to break down defences. There's a real lack of a clinical edge in the final third, which then, you know, cites why many people, I think, believe they should have gone bigger on signing a new centre forward in the summer, which they didn't.
But they've got Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz is such an amazing striker. Like, everyone knows that. He's an elite, probably one of the best in the world, apparently. But you don't know where to play him, do you? That sounds familiar.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not... I mean, he's their top goal scorer, but it's 4, which doesn't even make him Chelsea's like third, I think, top goal scorer or second this season. You know, Jackson, I consistently say this, and I know, listen, we're about to play Arsenal. Havertz scored twice against us last time we played Arsenal. That might happen again, but I still firmly believe, you know, I don't judge players on one game. I judged them on a longer period of time, and I look at the numbers, and I think Chelsea have massively upgraded their centre forward since Kai Havertz left the club, and I think that's just evident. Like, I think in all-round play, Jackson's a better player, and in finishing, he's a superior player, and I think the numbers show that. And I think Arsenal have realised what Chelsea fans realised over the course of 3 years, is that Kai Havertz is a technically good player, he's a talented player. On days he can be a highly effective player, but he is inconsistent, and he is someone that I think goes through real lapses in the season, and also is not the clinical finisher that you need if you want to compete with Man City. I think that's just become quite evident, as was the case in midweek. He had opportunities, and he is someone that has a presence, and I think they seem to do better when he's centre-forward rather than as a central midfielder. I wish they play him as a central midfielder on Sunday, because I think, you know, that's where I think Chelsea can get a lot of joy, actually. But it seems as well like they've, you know, Odegaard's been out injured. There's fears over Declan Rice not making this game. Leandro Trossard has gone through a really dry spell and has not quite hit the ground running. Mourinho has come in and not quite been the midfielder I think they hope. And obviously that defence, which has gained a lot of plaudits, and I've seen some people go as far as to say quite wildly on some mainstream podcasts that their defensive structure under Arteta is the best they've seen since like Mourinho. I mean, at Chelsea, I mean, I just find it laughable, right? Like, they have not won a Premier League title yet, and you've seen that defence start to creak a little bit and have errors. And I think that the good thing for Chelsea is Arsenal come into this game with more pressure on their shoulders than Chelsea do, I think. I know as Chelsea fans, we want to win this game. And I know as Chelsea fans, recent weeks haven't been amazing. There's been a big win against Newcastle, but there's frustration, obviously, by losing at Anfield and not beating Man United. But I think Arsenal are kind of already in a situation based on the way the league table looks that, and in their recent form, that they can't afford to drop too many points. And Chelsea are kind of in a position now where they can put down a bit of a statement at Stamford Bridge. And given their recent form, absolutely, and kind of a long-winded way to answer your original question, I think there is absolutely a reason why Chelsea should feel confident. I still think it'll be a very close game, and Chelsea's defensive solidity is not quite where Inter Milan's are. You know, I think Inter were very good at being able to put their bodies on the line, some key blocks in that game from a Havertz shot, the amount of crosses as well. I mean, it did become quite predictable what Arsenal were going to do. They seem to get in a repetition of playing the ball out to Bukayo Saka, their best player, and then trying to cross it into the box. And I think Inter, as an Italian team, figured that out quite early, were quite happy and content to sit deep and just head the ball away a number of times. So I don't quite buy that it was a dominant Arsenal performance and they were just really hard done by. I don't quite think they had the invention to break down a very solid defensive team in Inter Milan. It's whether Chelsea can replicate that and whether Chelsea can learn the lessons of what Bournemouth did effectively and what Newcastle did effectively in recent weeks and being able to put that into effect on Sunday.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, because I do want to touch on what you're saying about Arsenal fans and pundits saying that it is maybe the best defensive structure that the Premier League has seen since Mourinho, because I agree it's laughable. I kind of want to play devil's advocate to kind of look into it. The reason that it is maybe considered that is because Mikel Arteta and the football he plays, he basically plays to... People were moaning about our defensive structure, right? which is what I wanted to talk about with Caicedo and Lavia later on the show, but we can bring it in now. People are saying that Chelsea are too safe, playing two defensive midfielders, two centre-backs, and, you know, obviously it shuffles into a three or whatever, but then, you know, there's that solidity and it's too much. There's not enough creativity. If we want to talk about a lack of creativity, Arsenal basically play with four centre-backs and two defensive midfielders. More than half their team is defensive structure because they can't seem to not leak goals, basically, is just the case. In the Premier League alone, it's been 10 games, right? They've already conceded 11. And when Arsenal fans are talking about how, oh, this team is so good, it is the best since 15 goals have been conceded in the season. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's laughable, because you also think about that Chelsea side. Granted, you had William Gallas at left back, right? It was naturally a centre back, so you had three centre backs. But you had Paulo Ferreira, naturally defensive. Football has changed and evolved since then, and to continue to use that methodology is now hindering Arsenal, because quite frankly, overlapping, underlapping, you know, fullbacks going into midfield. I mean, this was the whole reason Zinchenko was so good for them. That's why they were talking about him 2 years ago. He was coming into midfield, helping them develop play. He was creative. He was doing all that stuff. And now they've just gone, yeah, now we don't want that. I don't understand it personally. And, you know, if anything, it plays into Chelsea's hands there. I think the one issue we'll be facing, where they may be defensive resolute, the only reason they're going to be resolute is because they have seven defensive players on the pitch at once.
I mean, they're not unique in that, no. To be fair. I mean, you watch the game against Man City and you see Pep Guardiola do this, right, where, you know, you see a number of centre-backs playing as full-backs. It's a broader conversation about control in the modern game, and is that actually helping players? Is it actually entertaining to watch? I think the thing that kind of makes me chuckle a little bit is that, you know, I have a decent memory, you have a decent memory, and when Chelsea used to play Arsenal and we'd stop them from scoring, Arsene Wenger and all his acolytes, all his media friends and all Arsenal fans would come out and decry it as a crime against football. And, you know, how dare Chelsea try and stop us from scoring? This is anti-football. How could Chelsea fans be proud of this? It's anti-football, all of this. And then when they go to Man City last season, it's a tight title race. They probably need to win the game and they defend like a Mourinho team. And then after the game, it gets heralded as some sort of tactical revolution. And then they all get all their, you know, Arsenal fans are quite sensitive, to be honest, but based on what I see, any sort of vague or mild criticism of Arteta is jumped upon very quickly. I noticed that. And they get very angry that they can be criticised for being a defensive team. I just would like it if they're, you know, it's not, I'm not going to sit here and condemn them for being a defensive-minded team or a team that is using the best of their abilities. That's good coaching. You know, Arteta has clearly improved Arsenal. I just would appreciate if people would be a little bit more honest and say, okay, maybe we were wrong all those years ago to condemn Mourinho, and maybe it was just the fact that we were bitter, that Wenger couldn't set up a defence properly, and that's why we were miles behind Chelsea at the time. And now they're in a title, or they're trying to be in a title race. I think the interesting thing is for me is that that pressure is increasing on Arteta, because if they don't win it this year, you kind of get to a point where, are they ever going to win it? Are they then going to start having an internal conversation about, is Arteta actually the guy for us? Do we need to actually step up? You know, because I think his belief in control might be a limiting factor. It might also be the reliance on Bukayo Saka to do everything all the time. That's something I felt watching Arsenal last season, is that this guy, I have a fear that Saka's going to be run down by the time he's about 26, 27, is because he has to play every game for them, and it feels like he's the guy that's relied upon. And to be honest, for such young shoulders, he delivers more than not. He's an amazing player. So I think it's an interesting time for Arsenal, and I think it's why Chelsea, I've said this a few times this year, is that I think sometimes as Chelsea fans, and rightly so, based on recent evidence, we go into these big games with dread, and we think about what could go wrong, how could this really derail things for us. And I'd rather us look at this as, you know, how is this an opportunity? How is this an opportunity for Maresca to put down a massive win? Because a couple of years ago, almost at the same time, Graham Potter faced Arsenal at home, and we lost 1-0. It was a really depressing game. All right, it was a tight scoreline, but Chelsea were not in that game at all. We barely challenged them. We barely threatened their goal. And the scale between both clubs looked like it was getting bigger, not shorter. And, you know, they very much were going for the title that year. If Chelsea can put a win on Sunday, I still don't think Chelsea will be in a title race, but I think what it would do is I think it would send out a very firm message that that gap is no longer there, or it's no longer significant if you look at the Premier League table. And for those players, I think for Chelsea to finally put a big win on the board this year, because you need to do it at some point. You know, I think under Lampard, we had this a number of times where we'd come short in big games and we'd say, well, you know, there was all these positives, but we just fell short in this way and that way. And we've done it with Potter. We did it with Pochettino last year. You've got to win one of these big games, because I think it's important. They're important landmark moments, because I think for people who maybe been a little bit more critical of Maresca, it's then you can put that on a board and say, that's one moment where he clearly went into a big game and done something big against, you know, a tough opponent, and bragging rights, all of that stuff is clear if you beat Arsenal. But on top of that, I think it would end this first block of the season in the best way possible. I don't know, are you more concerned than me, or do you feel like there is a real opportunity here for Chelsea?
I mean, you know me, I'm naturally concerned 99% of the time. But I do agree with you that there is an opportunity here. Chelsea ahead of Arsenal on the table. We're looking stronger. We're looking more confident as every game goes by. And I actually semi-disagree with you on Arteta, because Arsenal fans I speak to, some of them are now slowly starting to question him. And I'm not going to lie, I'd be in a similar camp. Granted, you could say, like you were saying, they need to maybe get an upgrade. I don't know how many are out there and are available right now in football that could come in and take Arsenal to the next level. And I also think that comes down to the fact that it's just such a strong Manchester City team. Like, we have become a farmers league. Like, the entertainment factor is there lower down the table, but it's a case of, you know, who's going to win the league every year. So it's kind of a case going, okay, well, of the sides that are going to just try and push on, you've got to wonder how and why they're going to do it and if they can do it. Mm. Arsenal obviously just parted ways with Edu as well. A big factor in that was the fact that Mikel Arteta wanted more control. That is maybe a bit of an issue as well, because what you read and what you hear, he doesn't like being questioned. He doesn't like being challenged. And it's very much his way or the highway. And Arsenal fans are starting to question it. You could see a certain sourness for me after that Inter Milan game. And not just a sore loser, Mikel Arteta. You could almost see, I don't know, to me it looked like a man that thought, okay, we're in trouble here a little bit. That's just not looking good. Because you can only push people so far. I think Pochettino is another great example with Spurs. You know, he took that Spurs team to second place finish, third place finish, really pushing on all the time, a Champions League final. They looked like they were going to get across the line, maybe just about. And then because they were pushed so hard, so consistently in the same way, the team started to slowly just piddle out, I think is the best way to say it. They just became more and more tired of the same things. And I think maybe not this year, but you'll see that maybe... they won't get rid of Mikel Arteta if they don't win the league this year. That just won't happen, because I think they realised, like I'm saying here, there's no one out there right now that you could go that would make a massive difference. People would say maybe Xavi, right? Because he's available and he's on the market. Mm. But would Xavi Hernandez really make that much of a difference in comparison to Mikel Arteta? Not really. And I think there's obviously the big connection, the way that Mikel Arteta has brought everyone together. I think that you bring in another manager, you're going to have a whole year of them trying to reignite that connection themselves. So, you know, there's all those questions as well. But Arsenal are in trouble. And again, we love long-winded answers. To come back to your original question, I do think that, yeah, as much as I'm worried, the ball is firmly in Chelsea's court. And if I was Enzo Maresca, I'd be going into this going, look, we did all right against Liverpool. Yes, Manchester United was disappointing because it was 2 points dropped. But the lesson to learn from Manchester United is you do not respect a team so much based on name. And I think if I was him, I'd be going into this last game going, you know what? They are Arsenal. They are strong contenders for the league title, potentially. We're at home. Chelsea haven't won against them in 2 years at home. And we've not got our scalp yet. We've just beaten Noah 8-0. Yes, I know it's Noah, right? But my God, if you're in the dressing room after an 8-0 win, it doesn't matter who it is, heads are going to be up here. They're going to be, you know, in a really mentally strong position. Capitalise on that. Really capitalise on that. And I think if that happens, Chelsea will get the result they need. But they need to capitalise on it. It's not a case of going, oh, well, maybe we'll figure it out. It'll get better. No. Get the job done. It's that simple now. Because I remember, as I said, me and you have great memories now. The fact that we're only in our mid-20s, we're able to go, do you remember? Do you know how depressing that is? But you think about that 13-14 season, which is what a lot of people are comparing the Chelsea side to, right? The little horse that needed some milk, right? Chelsea's issue that season wasn't the larger sides, it was the smaller sides. Because against Manchester City, against Arsenal, obviously the Gerrard slip, Chelsea were picking up, I think we picked up, what was it, like 14 out of a potential, what was it like, because it was the top four then. Help me with the maths. It was like...
We beat the top two home and away.
Yeah.
We beat Man City and Liverpool, you know, both times. And yeah, drew against Arsenal, obviously smashed them at home, beat Man United at home, I think we beat Tottenham at home, if I remember rightly, as well. So yeah, it was in big games, Chelsea were incredible that year. Yeah. They were even better than they were when they won the league the next year.
Exactly, exactly. And that's where I'd be looking at that and going, right, get your first scalp. They need it this year. I really do, because I think the questions have already started about Chelsea in big games. We've had three, and Liverpool, I think we were just unfortunate. You know, we did all right. United, 2 points dropped. City, I mean, we won't even talk about it. You and I were so depressed after that game. But again, like I said, it's Manchester City at this point. Chelsea are nowhere near their level. So this is an opportunity, if there ever was one, to shut people up, which is what Nicholas Jackson loves doing, which is what, you know, these players seemingly are now starting to enjoy a bit more. It's that be those aggressors in situations where people close them down. Go and do it against Arsenal, because I think not only will it put them in good stead with the media more, but I also do think it will definitely put Chelsea fans even more behind the team and Enzo Maresca and the ownership, by the way, as well, than they have been over the past 2 years. In fact, it definitely will. If Chelsea get a result, like a big result this weekend, I think the tide actually starts shifting.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it would be a significant win. I think it would be seen as one of the most significant Premier League wins we've had in some time. I'm trying to think, you know, you go back that, you know, even beating Man United felt like a big win last year, but, you know, it's not, I don't think it'd be to the same level. No. Because of where Arsenal have been in recent years, of, you know, the feeling that, you know, we weren't going to be close to Arsenal this year in the league. And, you know, you'd look at the league table and we'd be a few points clear of them heading into the end of November, December. And actually, you know, in terms of talking about big games, I know we face Villa and Tottenham, Champions League rivals, but in terms of like those huge games, because, you know, we've beaten Tottenham away, we've beaten Aston Villa before, it's not the same. Just looking at the fixtures, we don't play another big game until late January, 25th of January, against Man City away. So this is the last one for a little bit now. And I think that, you know, in itself is quite noteworthy. That, because, you know, you don't want to walk into this international break off the back of a defeat or questions about the actual strength of this team. And it doesn't have to be perfect. I'm not asking Chelsea to go out there. I don't expect Chelsea to go out there and absolutely wallop Arsenal. It's, you know, that's unrealistic. But if you can get over the line somehow, I think it then obviously is going to build a lot of confidence and trust, I think, which is the big thing that needs to be built now by Chelsea.
No, I agree. And I think there's your title for the pod as well. This is the game to build trust. And I think that's what all of us really need, because we're starting to get there now. And I think if Chelsea don't get the result, the eye rolls are going to start happening. People are going to start getting annoyed again, dependent on how bad the result is. If Chelsea do lose, touch wood, every piece of wood I can find around here, that, you know, Chelsea go out, go perform and do the business. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But also, guys, let us know your thoughts. Are Chelsea going to get the big result they need against Arsenal this weekend? Dan and I will obviously be at the game, so we will be getting you your voice note reviews straight afterwards. So on all good audio platforms, make sure you tune in and go, what have the boys got to say? Because we'll be telling you. But aside from that, we should probably move on now to the second to last, or penultimate, I should say, because Dan likes using big words and so do I, part of the show. And that is the Chelsea Echo 11. Dan, this is where it gets tasty, and this is where there's even more talking points in this episode. So, first of all, let's chat about the goalkeeper. I'm going to set a rule here now. I don't want us to do what we think he's going to pick in Enzo Maresca. I think we should pick what is correct for Chelsea, because we will be right.
But I think the problem is, that's nice, but I can't honestly, even though I'm very critical of Robert Sanchez, I can't confidently say that Jorgensen's massively better. Which is a shame. I wish I could. I wish I could make a firmer judgment on Jorgensen and be more confident about him. But that's the problem Chelsea have created. You know, if I had my way and I could go back to the summer, Georgia Petrovic would still be here, at the very least, if you can't sign anyone else. So that's what the situation Chelsea have created. And I actually think, you know, you look at both keepers, you can still argue that Sanchez has made some big saves. I'm not entirely sure how we judge Jorgensen yet. It's always like the classic thing with a young player, you know, you can only really find out how good they are until they get their opportunity. But the unfortunate thing with being a goalkeeper and the bottleneck that is created, especially if you're a backup goalkeeper, is that you're kind of waiting for the coach to radically lose faith in his first choice, which doesn't seem to be the case with Maresca at the moment, or that first choice, like last season, gets injured. That's how Petrovic got in and then proved himself to be a better first choice than Sanchez. So I think, yeah, sure, I'd want Sanchez to not be Chelsea's first-choice goalkeeper, but the sad thing is there's not a better second choice at the moment, at least from what I can see.
Why are you ruining the fun? Like, why do you have to do that?
We'll do this for other positions. I'll give you that for other positions. It's just we've started on the only position I think in the squad, really. I mean, arguably you could say this about the centre-back problem as well.
Yeah.
Where you don't have great alternatives if you've got a problem with the first choice.
Yeah, no, that is true. And I mean, look, the centre backs, that's a whole conversation. And obviously, look, in about 6 weeks' time, you and I are going to be very, very busy after Christmas, because I have a funny feeling Chelsea are going to have a busy window in terms of the defensive side of the team. So look, Robert Sanchez in goal, which makes me and Dan both want to cry horrendously. Left back now. The full-back situation for me, I was, despite the numbers that Reece put up in the first half, I was far less confident with the Reece at left-back, Malo Gusto at right-back situation that we saw at United. And I kind of raised my concerns with that post-Newcastle as well. I do think it needs to be Marco Correa in this game. I prefer him against Bukayo Saka. As much as Bukayo Saka likes to cut inside, he's still got the ability to go out on his right and hit the byline. So with that being said, I'd rather just have someone who's feels more confident taking him on in that fullback position with Marco Correa. And I'd probably see Reece at right back. Would you like to challenge me, or would you agree?
No, I agree on both. I think the main thing for this game is to see Reece more advanced. So far since he's returned, and I don't know if this is a consideration for his fitness, he has kind of just been staying behind the halfway line, it feels like at times. I mean, a little less against Liverpool, he was kind of advancing a bit more. But you'd want Reece to, you know, we spoke last week about Malo Gusto as a 10, popping up in his 10 positions. Well, who would you want to see in those positions more? Reece James. So that's kind of on that right side. And I agree with you about Cucurella being more aggressive. I think Gusto is the next one for me that feels like he's on that kind of risky kind of list of being dropped down to the B list in the B team. I just want to say, I don't think Gusto has been as bad as some of the people have been saying about him. I've seen some discussion and discourse around him that has made out like Malo Gusto has been absolutely atrocious this year. I don't quite agree with that analysis. But it hasn't been as good as last year. I don't know if that's an adaptation where he's actually one of the few areas, I think, in this team who has had to adapt quite a lot to the coach, when it feels like the attacking area of the team has kind of just kept on doing what they were doing well under Pochettino. And maybe that isn't helping him, because he's not quite as suited to that inverted fullback role as Marco Correa is. You know, I still firmly believe that, you know, Correa should be that inverted player, because I just think he suits it a lot more. I think Chelsea look a more composed and controlled team. And as well, aggressively, we know he can be very aggressive against a player like Saka. And I think it worked for him last year against Saka at home, not so much away. So yeah, I agree. I think Cucurella should be starting this game.
Cool. Well, that's that. Those are your fullbacks. Sparky and Reece are your two fullbacks for Chelsea in this game. The centre-backs, I think these two pick themselves, despite what we've been saying about how we are worried about this situation. Levi Colwill and Wesley Fofana, I think that is just going to be the pairing. You mentioned, obviously, with the goal against Chelsea for Man United, obviously, in the fixture at Old Trafford with the penalty, you did put a lot of the blame on Robert Sanchez, and I do agree with you. But I didn't think Wesley Fofana had his strongest showing against Manchester United last weekend.
No, he hasn't been that good. I think he has been a little bit wayward in his decision making. It kind of feels like he's been a step behind, and you know, you can kind of put some of, I guess, a lot of that down to a player who suffered a lot of injuries, didn't play any football last season for Chelsea. But again, it's a bit like the goalkeeper situation, right? The reason I say it's concerning is I just don't think the backup options are that good. Dzassi, no. Badiashil, no. Tosin has had, I think he had one quite good performance against West Ham, but I guess the context that, you know, West Ham were pretty atrocious that day.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't have enough confidence to say that any of the backup defenders should be coming in for Wesley Fofana. It's a problem. It really is. Who partners Levi Colwell is kind of still the big question for me. I know it's been Fofana, and it has for some time been clearly Fofana in terms of who Maresca selects, but in terms of who I actually think for the long term, I still think it's very unclear, unfortunately.
I think that's why I said I think Chelsea be in the market in January. I think Benoit Badiashile or Axel Dzassi will be gone in January. Both will be gone by the summer. I just feel that Wesley Fofana, I think, has a lot of potential. And, you know, Rahman Osman came on to Final Score to discuss that with us. And a big thing that Maresca has raised with Wesley Fofana is the fact he is playing with pain. He's still learning how to deal with that ACL injury. He's now had multiple knee injuries to the point where you look at it and you go, he needs someone around him, I think, can elevate his confidence, which is why I was so keen on Ruben Dias when that was touted. You know, if Chelsea are actually in the market for a centre back, I think a Ruben Dias or a player of that quality, that calibre, and I mean, look, it's not going to happen, but a name that comes to mind for me straight away, Marquinhos at PSG, just a player of that quality, if they could come into this Chelsea squad and help those younger players at centre back not only improve but continue to push on, I think Wesley Fofana would learn so much for a player like that and continue to develop and get better. And I think it gives him that time to sort of learn and adjust. So look, I think that in this fixture is going to be Wesley Fofana and Levi Colwell, but whether or not that remains the pairing for the foreseeable future, we will have to see. But look, that is going to be the Chelsea comparing for this game. Now we'll move on to the double pivot. Now, Raimo Lavra, Moises Caicedo is going to be mine and Dan's choices. I think that's fairly apparent, right? But an issue that was raised a few times in the Final Score show, which, by the way, you can listen back to on all good audio platforms and get involved in on match day. So make sure you head across to that after the Arsenal game. The issue that was raised was the fact that creatively, Moises Caicedo, Raimo Lavia isn't the best option for Chelsea. It slows the team down. It gives them almost too much defensive rigidity because you've still got three centre-backs basically when the team are on the attack. Is this all a load of nonsense, or is it something where you can see maybe why people feel that way about this Chelsea team when they are maybe dealing with that defensive midfield position?
I just can't agree, unfortunately. It's not like the team... Actually, last weekend was one of the first times, I guess, in attack we've been a little bit wayward. But there were moments in the first half where especially Caicedo was pressing up and giving the ball in good areas to Cole Palmer, or distributing the ball to Noni Madueke or Malo Gusto, or switching it to Pedro Neto to get Chelsea further forward. I just don't agree. Because then what happens with that conversation is, I'm sure, and it may have done on the show, is then leads to, well, what's your alternative? Enzo Fernandez. And we did a whole podcast about Enzo Fernandez. Fernandez has been nothing but, I think, atrocious so far this year. So it's not, again, it's like, it's balance is a big problem, and it has been a big issue for Chelsea in central midfield in recent years. I think it's better to have two players in there who have defensive awareness and can give you solidity, then have one, and also players in Caicedo and Lavia, especially Caicedo, who clearly can offer you something creatively in terms of passing, than having one who can't do either, which I think is the big concern with an alternative at the moment in terms of what we've seen so far this year. So, no, I don't really buy that. And, you know, they've only actually played together as a midfield pair a couple of times. We're not talking about a combination that's played together for 10, 20, 30 games. That's the hope with Lavia and Caicedo, is we do get that for an extended period of time. So, no, I don't really actually think that last weekend was a case of our midfield not doing enough to give a platform to the attack to create. I think that just when the ball got there, the decision making simply wasn't good enough from those players, because, you know, Caicedo can pass the ball to Cole Palmer. It's then on Cole Palmer to make the right decision. He can pass the ball to Jackson. It's then on Jackson to finish. He can pass the ball to even Malagusto when he was pressing up. It's then on Malagusto to have the right execution. I just felt that's where it broke down. I don't think it broke down because the players were making the right runs and the midfield was just passing it between each other like we used to see a lot of the time with Kovacic and Jorginho. Like, I don't think that's the issue at the moment. And you need that solidity against Arsenal, right? Arsenal are a physical team. It's one of the things that they still have at their disposal. So you need something to combat that. And I think that that's what Lavia and Caicedo can bring you against potentially Rice, Odegaard, you know, dependent on, of course, who starts for Arteta on Sunday.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. And I never understood it. I said that exact point to them on the show, by the way, when people were talking, so what's your alternative? You know, oh, well, you need the players to be able to get forward behind them. Well, that's why those players are that double pivot. It gives Reece James or Malagusto or whoever the license to get into those positions. And obviously, you'll be seeing maybe Cucurella tuck into midfield there, or you see whoever tuck in, which means that the solidity is there, which means that those players can go create and can go forward. Now, with that being said, we probably should talk about those creative players. And obviously the number 10 spot is going to be a big topic of discussion for myself and Dan. I do have a small update on that that came through about half an hour ago in our recording. So I thought I'd save it for now. But according to Enzo Maresca, we could potentially see Cole Palmer. Obviously, we're going to head to the press conference once we've said our pieces in the pod here. But according to Maresca, he says he's getting better. Hopefully, we can have him for the session or at least on Saturday, and then we can make a decision. Everyone else is fit and available for the majority of the first 11. We're rested in midweek. So, with that being said, you look at hopefully it being Cole Palmer. I'd say let's do a slash situation. So Cole Palmer slash somebody else. But having said that, we've already mentioned we'd want to find a way to get Cole Palmer, Christopher Nkunku and Nicholas Jackson into this team. How would you do that, Dan, if the situation was available where all three could be selected?
I think probably what you'd have to do is probably shift Palmer out to the right with the ability for him to then move more central. You know, I think that Nkunku for me out wide is just a bit of a waste of time. I've said this before. Nkunku kind of has to operate as a second striker. I think the big fear about that trio is what you potentially lose in terms of width, which has been a good thing about Chelsea so far this year. So I think that that would be a concern. But then also it gives you that tactical flexibility, wouldn't it? Because then you could still get width from potentially a fullback moving up like Reece James, who obviously is a massive creative threat, or Marco Carrera if he's going on the other flank. And if you think about that, you still would have at least one extra attacker to put into that formation. So you'd have Palmer, Nkunku, and then someone else, whether that someone else is Jadon Sancho or Pedro Neto or Mikhailo Mudryk, who could operate kind of more naturally as a wide player than the other two. And maybe it does make your team a little bit lopsided. I'm not sitting here and telling you it's a simple solution, but that's probably how I would do it. You have to get kind of that. I would want a triangle, basically, of Jackson, Palmer and Nkunku, where all three can kind of rotate. Mainly, Jackson is going to be holding up the ball. He's going to be doing the physical kind of tireless work that I think he does really well and opening up space for the other two. And really, I think it would be more a case of, in a dream scenario, you would see a ball gets played into Nicholas Jackson. He fends off the defender. He does kind of his trademark move where he's able to shield off the physical challenge of a defender, turn and move forward, maybe look for Palmer. And then Palmer's able to play a ball through to Nkunku, who's making a run in behind the defence. That's kind of how I would see, in kind of a very simple way, that trio working at their best, if that's possible.
I'd agree with that. That's exactly what I had in my head. With that being said, though, if Cole Palmer isn't available, I'm guessing the only change here you'd make would be Cole Palmer out, Nicholas Nkunku in, right? Or would it be João Félix?
I would go more Nkunku, just simply because I trust Nkunku's ability to finish a chance if it lands at his feet more than I do João Félix. I think maybe for him it would be a case of, well, I've just scored a couple of goals against Noah, and maybe my overall performance has been slightly better in recent weeks. Of course, you add into that the Panathinaikos game where Felix did really well. But yeah, I'd still think Nkunku for me. I just think he's a better player.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, that's definitely the line of thinking that I have. I just think that João Félix, I just don't think he's doing enough for me. And where people talk about the reason we bring him in was the credibility as in the bank of his previous employers. His previous employers also struggled to find ways to make him fit. So realistically, he has to find a way to get into this side. And like you, I just think Christopher Nkunku is more likely to deliver where the ball lands at his feet. And obviously, he was brought off early doors against Noah. So he's realistically going to be the person that comes into the side as they were protecting him potentially for this fixture. And then, as we said, Nicholas Jackson goes up front. Should Cole Palmer not be available, we're looking at Christopher Nkunku in the 10. Who are your wingers? Are you looking at Neto and Madueke? Or do you move Neto to the right and maybe put Mikhailo Mudryk on the left?
Yeah, I'm kind of more leaning towards Neto and Mudryk as the two wingers in this game. I don't think Madueke has had great performances recently. And I do think it's healthy for squad competition that there is an ability to break into the first team, especially if the team's not really winning. If the team had won convincingly at Old Trafford and Noni Madueke had been a part of it, I think that the justification would be, well, you just stick with the Premier League team that's winning. But of course, I think Madueke didn't have a good performance. Pedro Neto, I think, still deserves to stay in the first team. I think he's had a run of decent performances. And yeah, for Mudryk, this would be a huge call. I'm trying to think, was it Wolves at the start of the season? The last time, the only Premier League game I think he started. I might be wrong on that, but I believe that's the only league game he started, and he was taken off within 45 minutes for Neto. So for Mudryk, it's been kind of a long road to get back to a Premier League start. But I think it would be a huge opportunity for him. Of course, narratively, there's that thing with Arsenal. He did score against Arsenal last year at home. So if he does get the opportunity, he has to take it. Because I don't think there's much patience with Enzo Maresca for Mudryk. I don't blame Maresca for that. Because I think Mudryk is a really frustrating player. And I think he's someone that I think technically has shown himself to be really, really poor. But he's had some good performances. And you said, you know, last week, should he start? This is the time for him to prove that he has developed and has got better and has made better decision making in recent weeks. So I think Mudryk might just get his start on Sunday. And I think Neto should still be in the 11. So yeah, the freedom you have of Neto is he can play off the right as well.
I agree. And I'm so glad you finally joined me on the Mikhailo Mudryk hype train. It's where it needs to be. It's where it's at.
It's not a hype train. It's just, you know, it's mainly, I think, the failures of others. I think that for Mudryk, it still is a case of you need to produce. I even think watching him a bit against Noah that he could have done more against Noah. And I know people get angry at me for saying that because he did score an incredible goal. But I think against that quality of opposition, I don't think he dominated as much as he could have. And I think he should have really been out there putting his name out there as, like, I'm the stand-up player here. And of course, it's a higher caliber opponent. He's going to have less of the ball. He's going to have less opportunities against Arsenal. And it's whether he can make an impression, like Pedro Neto did, that he deserves to stay in that team after the international break.
I agree. And we'll have to see. But that is the Chelsea Echo 11 for Arsenal, a game which me and Dan are very much looking forward to. As we said earlier in the show, if you want to hear our thoughts after the game, make sure you check out the Chelsea Echo voice note review on all good audio platforms. Aside from that, of course, we do talk about the previous fixture in our preview show every single week. And of course, if you want to get Dan's reaction, make sure you head across to The Son of Chelsea on YouTube, because it is all there in Dan's sexy new set. But aside from that, you've heard from me, you've heard from Dan, you've heard from Tom. Now we've got to go listen to the bald man and to Maresca.
Ciao, Edson. When you face a team like Arsenal, it's supposed to be a Premier League favorite.
We're always looking for something different, no matter if it's Arsenal or another team, to see how we can attack and defend in the right way. We did this season against any team. For sure, Arsenal, I said, in this moment is the closest one to the best team in England, that is City. But we're going to try to do our game and prepare in the best way we can and try to win.
Do you think you're missing that statement win? Is that the only thing that you've missed so far? You played the lost City, lost to Liverpool, drew against Man United. Do you think you need that against Arsenal? It's really convincing.
For sure I would like to win this kind of game. But since we start, I always said the same, that for sure I analyze the result, but first of all I analyze the performance. And do you think we deserve to lose against Liverpool? Me too. But it's football. Now hopefully we can win Sunday, we can win that kind of game. But also I think at the end it's in this competition, in the Premier League, it's important and it's difficult to win against any team. For sure, if I can decide, I would like to win against Arsenal on Sunday, no doubt. But also, I think Liverpool away, the performance was very good. We didn't deserve to lose. Even City, the good thing is that we are there. We are there, and you cannot see big difference when we play this kind of game. And this is the most important thing. For sure, I don't have doubt if it's Sunday or it's next game. But for sure, we're going to be there and win this kind of game, no doubt.
I know for a lot of Chelsea fans, this game on Sunday, it's the biggest game of the season, when they saw against it. Is that the same for you as well? Until this is the biggest game you've had?
And I try to take all the game in the same way, serious, prepare in the best way, how we can attack good, how we can defend good. And I try to take all the game in the same way. But again, if you ask me, in the next two games, which one you want to win? For sure, I want to win both. But if I have to take one, I take the next one. Also, because in two games we play Leicester away, that I feel very close to them.
What one thing you mentioned there, Enzo, was the pressure, and you like the pressure in these games. The pressure seems even greater at the moment. Is that because Chelsea are, if you like, back? You know, last couple of years, Chelsea against Arsenal has not been seen as such an even contest. But with what you've done so far this season, it's almost like this is a big chance for them, and the pressure is increased because of that. And is that why you're thriving on it?
I don't know the last 2 years. How was the feeling? In this moment, the feeling from us is that we can compete and we can win against any team, and if you don't take serious and if you don't do the right things, also you can lose against any team. But for sure we have the right feeling that we go in the right direction, and hopefully Sunday we can give our fans a good day.
So opinions have been said, numbers were given, and of course the big bald man Enzo Maresca did speak. But ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Chelsea Echo. If you have enjoyed the podcast, please make sure you give us a 5-star review if you're listening on all good audio platforms. And if you're watching us, stick around, drop a sub. It's all good over here on the Chelsea Echo, and we are very excited to bring you more content throughout the rest of the Premier League season. I would say follow me on Twitter, but unfortunately Elon has not let me get my account back yet, so we're relying solely on Dan for all that traffic. So if you want to do us a massive favour and give us a share, that would mean a lot as well. So make sure you follow at the Chelsea Echo on Twitter and at the Chelsea Echo _ on Instagram as well. Big thanks to Chelsea Report, by the way, as well, on Instagram, who has been collabing with us on all of our posts. So if you are from around there, please do make sure that you come and stick around and watch the Chelsea Echo as well. But I've been Louis, that's been Dan. Tom gave you numbers, Enzo gave you things to talk about, I guess, from his press conference, and we'll see you for the next one. Ta-da.